So I, like, for my entire life, have really, really struggled with making decisions, and I, like, can never, like, land on something. I always, like, evaluate every option and, like, you know, go into these rabbit holes of just, like, pursuing and researching every single viable opportunity and end up, like, delaying a decision or not making a decision or just kind of, like, getting forced into a decision that I don't really want to make. Mm-hmm. And I've always dealt with this, and so for Smarter Living, I had always wanted to write about decision making and why we fall in these holes. So just in when I was doing research and reading the literature, I came across a lot of stuff that you had written, and then I came across FOBO, and I was like, oh my God, you have named this thing that has haunted me my entire life.
That's Tim Herrera. He's a Smarter Living columnist in the New York Times. I'm your host, Patrick McGinnis, and this is FOMO Sapiens, part of the HBR Presents Network. My name is Patrick McGinnis, and I'm the guy who invented the term FOMO. That's short for fear of missing out. Today, FOMO is an epidemic, and it's changing us so much that it sort of feels like we're evolving into a new species. But FOMO doesn't have to take over your life. You can find the power to choose what you actually want and the courage to miss out on the rest. I'll show you how right here on FOMO Sapiens.
FOMO. FOMO.
Welcome to FOMO Sapiens, the show where I interview people who are changing the world and ask them how they choose from among the many opportunities and options in their busy lives. And while this show may be called FOMO Sapiens, on this episode, we're going to talk about the other foe you need to know, and that is FOBO, or fear of a better option. When you have FOBO, you keep all of your options open, you struggle at making commitments, and you live in a world of maybes. You value optimization and option value above all else. I've never really understood why FOBO never became a thing. I actually invented it at the exact same time that I came up with FOMO, but while FOMO has gone on to become a word celebrity, FOBO has languished in obscurity. Languished, that is, until the summer of 2018, because last summer I was sitting at a restaurant during lunch and my phone basically blew up. All of a sudden, a bunch of people forwarded me a column from the New York Times, the Smarter Living column, and guess what? It was all about FOBO. And so that was the moment when FOBO stepped out of FOMO's shadow and made it into the pages of The Gray Lady. Seeing it in the pages of The Times, but without any mention of its origin story, actually gave me a little FOMO, so I reached out to the author of the piece, and we ended up running an interview on the origins of FOMO and FOBO, and the dangers, and some potential solutions to FOBO itself. And so today, we are going to explore FOBO with somebody who has clearly been thinking about it as much as I have, and that is with Tim Herrera, who is the founding editor of Smarter Living at the New York Times, where he edits and reports stories about living a better and more fulfilling life. Before joining the Times, he was a reporter and editor at the Washington Post, and prior to that, he worked at AM New York and Newsday. And one more note before we get started. You'll notice that we taped this interview right around the holidays when FOMO and FOBO are running especially strong all over the world, but especially in New York City. So that's why we're agonizing over our holiday party schedules, and it's also probably why we both sound like we're on a sugar high. All right, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to FOMO Sapiens.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. I like it, bringing energy.
This is great. I am so jazzed about FOBO. It was so amazing to chat with you over the summer. Just we randomly connected. I'm so hot on this. It's amazing.
I feel like it's really in the zeitgeist. But before we go to FOBO,
yes,
I want to start with the question I like to ask everybody is, you know, we all feel a little FOMO sometimes.
Yeah.
So what turns you into a FOMO sapien?
Oh, boy. I feel like the older I've gotten, I feel FOMO so much less than I used to. Like, I really, really, really used to feel FOMO about so many things, like, just, like, missing out on, like, friends events or missing out on work things or, like, comparing yourself to, like, peers and things like that and feeling like you're falling behind. But I don't know, like, I just feel like the older I've gotten, the more I've realized, like, a lot of that, like, doesn't really matter. And, like, you know, I know you've written about this, but, like, finding out kind of, like, what you actually care about and, like, focusing on those things, I feel like has been such a great way for me personally to get around FOMO. And, like, I still feel it, obviously, about tons of things. But I think in the overall, you know, feeling of FOMO, I've noticed that I'm, like, getting a little more at peace with, like, JOMO.
JOMO. Oh, my goodness. We're going to come back to
we'll
JOMO.
We'll get to that one, I know.
We're going to come back to JOMO because I have all these feelings about JOMO.
As do I.
But I get you. Like, I think I still, by the way, I tend to think maybe I've overcome my FOMO and then something like let me tell you what I did Saturday night. Right. I went to 4 different holiday parties.
Oh, so like, totally. Wait.
Clearly, that was all FOMO, right?
Right.
Boom.
Yeah.
And I don't say goodbye anymore. I don't know if you do this. Like, I've been trying this new thing where I just sneak out the door.
The Irish exit. It's amazing. Yeah.
Which, by the way, in Brazilian Portuguese, it's known as the French exit.
Oh.
A saída francesa.
Whoa. Well,
but whether it's French or Irish, that's a new strategy. I don't know if it's rude or if it's what, but that's the way that my FOMO is manifesting itself.
You know what? Can I tell you? So my Saturday, so I feel like this Saturday, like everyone you know in the world had their holiday party, on a birthday party, whatever. But what I did Saturday was I stayed at home. And I ditched 4 parties that I was supposed to go to. Felt kind of bad, but like that's something like 5 years ago I would have like never have done, never even thought about. But I had a nice quiet night in. I watched movies with my cats. Yeah. I like read a little bit, and it was beautiful.
Okay, so I guess the takeaway here is that you truly have evolved, and I haven't. So,
well, I'm a very evolved FOMO sapien. That's what I'm getting at. Yes.
Okay, so now that I know that you're beyond the FOMO, tell me how FOBO first landed on your desk. How did I end up getting 397 texts that one afternoon? I guess it was in June.
Yeah, of 2018. So I, like, for my entire life, have really, really struggled with making decisions, and I, like, can never, like, land on something. I always, like, evaluate every option and, like, you know, go into these rabbit holes of just, like, pursuing and researching every single viable opportunity and end up, like, delaying a decision or not making a decision or just kind of, like, getting forced into a decision that I don't really want to make. Mm-hmm. And I've always dealt with this, and so for Smarter Living, I had always wanted to write about decision making and why we fall in these holes. So just when I was doing research and reading the literature, I came across a lot of stuff that you had written, and then I came across FOBO, and I was like, oh my God, you have named this thing that has haunted me my entire life. And it was such a revelation. It was like, oh my God, I'm not alone. This is just a thing that everyone deals with. Wow. And that was my first like experience with naming this thing that I like has been, you know, a monkey on my back for, you know, my entire life.
I'm so curious. So you were just kind of Googling around, and it just sort of like, you found it.
Yeah, I found it. Yeah.
Wow. I guess I'm doing my job right.
Your SEO is tremendous.
No, I'm going to tell you, the reason why I asked that question is because a couple, FOMO has been around. Like, right. FOMO's got a life of its own. Like, it's like, it grew up and went to college. It's got, it's, you know, first starter apartment in Brooklyn, whatever. FOBO, which I always felt was way more a problem, I you know, because it's this kind of thing that tends to, as you mentioned, FOMO goes down over time for most people. FOBO only ramps up as you have more options, right?
Totally, yeah.
And so I always thought it was like kind of amazing it didn't ever go anywhere. But at the same time, there was this one company that was like an appliances company in the Midwest that put it in one of their ads. They did this ads about FOBO. And they called it fear of better options instead of fear of a better option. But anyway, it was a really funny ad. So I reached out to the CMO of that company and was like, this is cool. We should talk. And then the company went bankrupt.
Oh,
it was called like JJ Gregg or something like that. But anyway, that was it. And then so I knew that it was like had been at least somewhat discovered by somebody.
Right,
but
right.
But then when I saw it in the New York Times, page of the New York Times, it just threw me like a total curveball.
And it was kind of new to a lot of readers, too. Like, a lot of the reader responses that I got were people who were sort of in the same position that I was, where they knew that they, like, had struggled with making decisions and had always kind of, you know, fallen into these endless rabbit holes that don't ever really lead anywhere. So putting a name to that concept and that idea, I think, like, just kind of knowing that, one, like, it's a thing and it's not unique, and two, that there's, like, other people dealing with this and trying to figure out their own way, like, I think that's really comforting, and that was a lot of the feeling that I got in a lot of responses was, like, okay, like, it's good to know that other people are struggling with this, like, I can kind of chill a little bit.
Yeah, so tell me, like, I imagine, I mean, a lot of people read your column, right?
Yeah.
It's a really, it's just, it's right in front of you. Go into the New York Times, it's like the first thing you see, I mean, unless you, if you're me anyway. And so when you hear back, do you hear from people all over the world? Like, what are the kind of the things that people, like, for that article, what did you hear from people?
Yeah, I really did hear, so that article really kind of blew up, and I ended up, I did hear from a lot of people around the world. I did hear from a fair amount of readers in Brazil, because one of the other terms we had in there was foda, which is a profanity in Brazil, in Portuguese.
It's the F word.
But no, like, it's funny, like, a lot of times when I write about concepts or ideas that are, like, relatively new to, like, a general population, just because, like, I, like, am writing about it at the Times, there's the assumption that I'm sort of a de facto expert in it. And so this one is really funny because, you know, the whole conceit of the column was about decision making. And so the majority of the responses were people presenting scenarios and then asking me what decision they should make. And so,
wow.
Like, stuff, like, all over the spectrum. Like, people who, like, wanted to know, like, what college they should go to or, like, whether they should, like, move in with a significant other. Like, I was revisiting some in preparation for this, and one person was asking me to make the decision for them whether they should move to the U.S. And so I was like, I'm kind of, like, new to this thing. That's too much pressure for me. But yeah, I mean, people just, like, want help making decisions because it's just so hard when you have so many options. And it's funny, like you mentioned earlier about kind of FOMO ramping down as you kind of age. And, like, I feel like FOBO is the exact opposite because, at least in my experience, and this is something that I talked with readers about, was the older you get, the more cognizant you are of the limited time you have left and how important it is to kind of devote your time to the things you care about. But so kind of the corollary to that is, like, am I devoting my time to the right things? And, like, what are the other things I should be devoting my time to? And that's a whole other spiral of FOBO that it's almost impossible to get out to, because that's existential FOBO, yes. Which is a whole other category.
Yes, and in fact, I had somebody tell me, you know, I've talked to lots of people, right, about how they deal with these things, and
yeah.
I've been trying to figure out, at least expand my understanding. Right. I had a woman tell me that her father uses this metric called quality time remaining, which is thinking about, like, how much more time do I have to live well, which I was just like, I gotta tell you, I get, like, good on you.
Right,
you know,
right.
You're, like, a hearty, you know, you're probably, like, Northern European or something. But, like, that's just, like, stress-inducing for me.
Yeah, we gotta pull it back. I'm not trying to go there tonight.
Yeah, I think about that, it's interesting, and I'm curious, have you tried, so in the article that we did, we talk about solutions for FOBO, and
yeah.
One of the things that I talk about is asking the watch,
mm-hmm.
which is when, you know, for those of you who are listening who haven't done this, is basically the idea that, like, I'm trying to decide, and I do this all the time, by the way, like, chicken or fish?
Yeah.
Okay, like,
yeah.
I like them both. I don't know. It's like, oh, my God, so much stress.
Right.
And so I will say, okay, the right half of my watch is the chicken, the left is the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked out at my watch, see where the second hand is, and choose.
Yeah.
Have you tried that?
I remember you telling me about that.
It's so good.
I do love that. And I love kind of, like, turning these arbitrary decisions over to this kind of universe, because I feel like a lot of these decisions are so low stakes.
Yes.
And, you know, like, the delta between, like, an average decision you could make and the very best decision you could make in, like, these low stakes situations is basically nothing. So
yeah.
We stress over, like, chicken or fish for, like, half an hour when we're just hungry and we just want to eat something. And when we actually are eating that thing, we want to remember the struggle we had with the decision. So just, like, make a decision. So, like, I'm all about, like, flipping a coin. The watch thing is amazing. Just, like, turning things over, just like whatever, like, it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme, and this is just such low stakes, like, just make a decision. And that was one of the things that in the article that I wrote about was the MFD,
yes.
The mostly fine decision, which is kind of my approach to, you know, evaluating your options for a given decision and choosing the one that is has the minimum outcome that you'd be okay with, the minimal
yes.
acceptable outcome.
Yes.
And, like, that is something that, like, I have definitely adopted in my own life and something that I, like, still advocate for people when I, you know, I'm talking about things like this. Because, again, like, the differences between, like, average decisions and incredible decisions for most things in life is minimal, you know?
Yes.
Like, the time and energy you invest in stressing over a decision versus what you would gain by just making something that you're not 100% about, like, it's you know, it's no trade-off. It's totally worth it.
And then you free up the time. It's the thing, if you, like, the average person makes 30,000 decisions in a day.
Yeah.
If you're spending more than a millisecond deciding on, like, whether to add, like, whether it should be oat milk or have, but by the way, you live in New York City, like, oat milk is everywhere. It's so, like,
and you know what? I got swept up in it.
You can have the oat milk. I reject its popularity,
but if you think
about these things too much, you don't have room to think about, like, what's my purpose in life, right?
Right.
I have this friend who I interviewed recently who is a really interesting woman. She's a Harvard MBA,
mm-hmm.
And did not go into the business world. She's
yeah.
a relationship counselor and
oh,
works
good.
With, you know, people. And I think she also went to Harvard Law, and she's a very educated woman.
Yeah.
And decided to choose what made her happiest
mm-hmm.
when she was doing this. Because she had done those things kind of, you know, probably because, you know, she felt this pressure.
Right, yeah.
And all this stuff.
Yeah.
And she says, her name's Yael Melamed, and she says, I don't ask myself, is it good enough? I ask myself, is there enough good?
Mm.
Which I thought was really, it's a great little heuristic that you can
yeah.
carry around with you.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, I wrote an article 2 or 3 weeks ago about our cognitive attentional capacity.
Sorry.
Right. So it's just, you know, about the kind of ambient things in our brains that are taking up space that really shouldn't. And that article was focused on our cell phones and laptops and devices, and how we, even if we put them away, even if we turn them off, they're still kind of occupying this space in our brain that should be spent doing work or thinking about things you care about or whatever else. And I feel like decision making is one of those things that really can occupy this outsized part of our attentional capacity, and it's just so easy to get bogged down. But it's also one of those things, like a couple of decisions here and there can just free up so much of your attention to really focus on things that you actually do care about.
Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah.
And the other thing that you can do if you want to feel some relief from all this is try to embrace JOMO. So have you noticed, I'm curious if you know, JOMO's everywhere right now. Like,
yeah.
JOMO, seriously, the amount, it's kind of like, I've gotten so many inbounds of JOMO, JOMO,
right,
JOMO,
right,
JOMO,
right.
JOMO, JOMO.
Yeah.
And so JOMO is joy of missing out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been around for a while. In fact, the guy who invented it lives in New York. I'm trying to track him out. So if you're listening, Emil Dash, I want you to come on the show.
Yeah.
But what's your thought on JOMO?
I am extremely pro JOMO, and I feel like that's like sort of the flip side of the coin about FOMO. Like, I feel like JOMO sort of increases as you age in a good way. Like, I think, like, you know, like we're talking about our weekend plans. Like, you know, 5 years ago, if I were spending a night, you know, a Saturday night in, I'd be like, oh my God, like, what are all my friends up to? I'm just wasting my time here. But now, because I know that, like, I really appreciate getting rest and feeling rested and, you know, spending time with my cats and having time to be alone and kind of center myself, something that I know that I appreciate. And so the trade-off between not going out, seeing people, but staying in and kind of treating myself, like, to me, that's a no-brainer because I know that's what I care about. Like, I'll see those people again.
Yes.
But to have a free Saturday night totally by yourself just to, like, be with your own thoughts and recharge a little bit from the week, like, that to me is, like, one of the most valuable things. And, you know, I think, again, as we get older, we realize the value of time and how it's slipping away. And, you know, I think, you know, time is better spent doing the things that you know you genuinely and sincerely love rather than things you feel like you should be doing or things that you're obligated to do. And I think, like, that's, like, a sort of symptom of FOMO is we're doing these things and sort of have an obligation or just be like, we feel like we should be doing them. But, you know, I think taking a step back and realizing and being sincere with yourself about what you actually want to be doing and what you actually want to spend your time with, like, that's, like, the FOMO cure, I think.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about JOMO
mm-hmm.
because I agree with that, with everything you said. I think mm-hmm. It's right. Like, if you can get to a place where you can observe what's happening, it's kind of like being detached, right? Like, you know, if you're like really good at meditation, or
yeah.
I guess, I don't know if being good at meditation is the right way to say it, but if you
right,
meditate,
right.
and you can just watch things pass by and you don't focus on them and you're detached from them,
yeah.
great. So for JOMO, I think it can work. There's two things that I kind of caveats that I put on it. The
mm-hmm.
first is you can only have JOMO if you know what the thing you're missing is. So, like,
yeah.
it's like if you've been to 1,000 restaurants, nightclubs, or whatever, if you
right,
like,
right.
it's like, okay, I know what that is. Like, did it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
got the t-shirt. Like, I'm good missing out today.
right, yeah.
Whereas, like, oh, you know, if it's something that's a little bit like you've never gotten a chance to do, I think
mm-hmm.
JOMO is a little tougher.
Right, right, right.
That's the A.
Yeah.
B is, I think JOMO is great for, like, small things in life. It's like the Friday night in.
Right.
It's not so good about, like, I'm having joy of missing out on, you know, fulfilling my true destiny.
right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Like,
totally.
or like finding my soulmate. Like, nobody's like,
right,
glad
right.
I didn't find my soulmate. I'm just, you know, like maybe you will or you won't, but like that's
right.
just not a JOMO inducing event. So
right, right, right.
So
yeah.
that's how I think about it. So I think it's a good target, but
yeah.
with the realization that, like, and people, you know, everybody uses these terms. They, like, brag about, like, I've got so much JOMO
yeah,
right now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm like, you know what, like. Just keep your JOMO to yourself.
Well, no, it's true. Like, it is a sliding scale. And, you know, I wrote a story last week, and I spoke with Greg McCowan, who wrote one of my favorite books in the world, Essentialism.
Yeah.
And, you know, his whole thing, like, his entire, you know, career is about, you know, really finding the things that are core to yourself and core to your identity and kind of shedding everything else. And I think that is, like, such a revelation. And when I first read that book, I, like, was just, my mind was blown, because it seems like such a simple, like, throwaway idea, but once you really dig into it and really start implementing it, like, you really do see the value of, like, knowing who you are, knowing what you care about, and being fine with, like, letting other things slide away. And I think that is, like, that and FOMO, I think, are so inherently tied together, because once you sort of, like, realize what you're okay with missing out and what things that you would feel bad about missing out, like knowing the difference between those two, again, seems like such a casual throwaway idea, but really harnessing that knowledge to like direct your life and devote your energy and time to the things that you know are actually going to have a genuine impact rather than things you kind of do for the sake of doing them. Like, I think that's like the holy grail. And like, obviously, like, I'm not good at that. Like, nobody's good at that. But I think that like aspiring to that place is like, I think it's something that everybody should be like working toward.
Yes, definitely. And one thing we can do to work towards that is read smarter living. So I was curious, we were talking before, before the interview that I read the New York Times every day. I've been a subscriber for many years.
Great.
Yeah.
Keep reading.
Well, it's just great. Right. I think it's, we have so many choices in terms of news. And by the way, it's not like if you don't want to pay for news, like you get tons of free news, but yeah. If you have a place that has like kind of consistently good content, it just adds a lot to your life, and you can, instead of looking at 50 things, you can look at that. But I also get this feeling that the Smarter Living column always is like one step ahead of me. It's like, do you know what I mean? You're like putting the article that I should have, that I didn't even know I needed that day.
Right,
but then
right.
Like, oh my goodness. Like, it's like, you know, it'd be like the, just something that I'm just, it sort of like hits me. How do you do that? Are you like looking at SEO? Like what's your secret?
So I get emails about that exact idea literally every day. And like, honestly, like the most common email I get, every Monday morning, so I in the Smarter Living newsletter, it comes out every Monday morning.
Yes.
And I always ask readers for feedback or ideas, or I just invite them to chat or comment. And something I hear time after time, no matter what the topic is, I hear from like literally hundreds of readers who are saying, this is exactly what I needed to hear today. How did you know this is what I needed? Huh. And like, every time I get one of those emails, like it warms my heart, because like, I think what really resonates with readers about Smarter Living is that there's a real vulnerability to it and a real relatability. So a lot of stuff you read in like service journalism or like self-help type stuff, a lot of it comes from a place of having prescriptive, definitive answers from the leading world experts. And, you know, Smarter Living is kind of taking a little different tack, which is we're all just kind of in this together, figuring out as we go, screwing up along the way, but just kind of trying our best. And that's really the tone and the philosophy that we built Smarter Living around. And I think it really resonates with readers to, like, know that, like, you know, like, I have this, like, I wrote a column about this summer, that there's this running joke in, like, my circle of friends that anytime I screw up, like I'm late or I waste money or I do something stupid, everyone automatically says like, oh, and you're the Smarter Living editor. And like, yeah, like sure, it's an easy dunk, fine. But like, yeah, like, you know, I think there's the you know, being vulnerable and acknowledging our faults and things we're bad at, I think just kind of opens up real paths to self-improvement, whatever form that takes. And so when I write these stories and get these emails from people who are like, this is exactly what I needed today, like, I'm like, oh, that's amazing, because that's what we're going for. Like, I hope that every time I write something that is what you need that day, like, that's exactly the emotion that we're going for and what we're trying to be a service for.
And do you ever get, like, any hate mail? I mean, there's a lot of crazy people on the internet. Like, so tell me about that.
So Smarter Living is very specifically designed so that we are not writing off the news. We don't write about politics. We don't cover the news of the day. However, the most controversial thing that we run, weirdly enough, I didn't know this was a controversial thing, well, to such a degree, is I have a writer named Jolie Kerr, who is a cleaning expert. And
yeah, she was in this week, right?
Yeah, that's right, that's right, that's right. And she writes pretty frequently, and a lot of times, you know, it's cleaning advice, you know, around specific themes or topics or ideas or whatever, and she'll usually give a product recommendation along with, like, how to actually clean a given mess. And, again, I knew this was controversial, but I didn't know to this degree, but the most hate mail I get across anything that I run, anything one of my writers writes, is about people who are really passionate about non-chemical cleaning products.
Oh, yes.
They absolutely jump down my throat, want to get me fired, say that I'm unqualified for running these types of things. And this is Jolie's world. She deals with this all the time.
Wow.
But the first time she wrote something for me where we recommended products, I was totally taken aback. I, like, had to, like, step back because just the volume, it was overwhelming. And, like, I, you know, what are people going to hate on me for? Like, oh, that was a dumb, like, piece of advice. Like, fine. But, man, it's real intense, and you'd be shocked at the viciousness in that world, man. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah, because I guess these people, I mean, I think about, she wrote an article about how to, like, clean your laptop, right?
Yeah.
And it'd be like, if you recommended, you know, if it wasn't anything but vinegar, like, somehow you're going to poison yourself, and, like, you're, like, literally going to kill millions of people.
It's crazy.
Not to dismiss people's concerns.
No,
but there's a way to express yourself without being, like, angry.
people really just jump down your throat. I had no idea, but now I'm used to it. And like, you know, today, like we, I don't think we ran anything, any product recs today, but yeah, like every time it's like, okay, well, got a brace for this. It's coming.
Wow.
Weird that cleaning is the most controversial topic Smart Living covers.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
That is actually like, yeah. I mean, that's really,
it's wild.
Do you mostly, is it largely domestic? Is it global? Like, what is your kind of, when you hear from people, are they from all over the
place? It really is all over the world. Like, the Times in general is pursuing a global audience.
Yeah.
So we try to write in a way that we're able to reach readers around the world. But Smarter Living, you know, again, because we don't write off the news or write off, you know, this is the day, it's very kind of something for everybody. And
yeah.
We try not to write for a specific geographic area or demographic, something that anybody can take advice away from. And so as a result, we really do have readership all around the world that I hear from people all around the world, which is really, really rewarding.
That is amazing. And by the way, if you do email Tim, I'm curious about this. So you have like kind of an email filter that comes out.
Yeah.
That I've seen a couple people use over mm-hmm. the years, but not a lot of people use these. It's kind of
yeah.
like you get an email back and it says, listen, thank you for your email.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you need this, you check out this. If you need that, check out this.
Yeah.
I read my emails, but I may not respond, but just know that I read that. You must get a high amount of email. Like, does that even work? Do you find that helpful? Have you ever thought about, like, outsourcing it? Like,
yeah.
How do you manage email? Because email, to me, is my number one scourge in my life. And now, of course, you add in text messages, WhatsApp,
mm-hmm.
all the social media, like, it's a lot. Like,
yeah.
Why did you do that? Does it work? What was your recommendation
yeah.
to me on that?
Oh my God. I mean, I hope you have like 3 hours because email is all I ever want to talk about. So I am, like infamously and notoriously bad at email.
Okay.
And I don't like to do it, but it's so central and core to my job that because I'm so bad at it that like, you know, occasionally I have missed like important things or miss a deadline or whatever, just because I'm so bad at email. And you know, the main reason is that I just get such a volume that I can't keep up. You know, like I was on a panel the other night talking about freelance pitching, and I get like probably between like, I don't know, like 100 and 300 freelance pitches a week. And so that's on top of like the work that actually I'm doing and that I, you know, from coworkers and all that. But so the auto reply that you're talking about, I learned this trick from Adam Grant, who is an absolute genius, smartest person working in this space. But I cold emailed him last year. Just like say, hey, just a chat, like, you know, see what he's up to, see if he wants to, you know, do something Smarter Living or whatever. And I got this immediate auto reply that's like, hey, thanks for your email. Know that I read it, but I can't respond to everybody. Here are 5 options for the 5 most common emails I get. And one was like, you know, if it's a media request, do this. If it's a, you know, booking, do this, blah, blah, blah. And it just blew my mind. Because I'd never thought about that weirdly. And so we got lunch, and I asked him about it, and it's just incredible. I set mine up earlier this month because one of my resolutions for next year is to be better at email. And this is one of the ways that I'm trying to build structures in my life so that I can take decisions away and automate that part of it. And even in just a couple of weeks that I've had it running, it's been incredible. Like, I don't have to worry about, like, oh, did I email back that person? Or do I need to get back there? Or did I direct them to the right person? Because it's just, like, taken care of.
Wow.
And it's a decision I don't have to make anymore. And, you know, I set that up in conjunction with, you know, some filters and separate inboxes for emails that I know need urgent responses or whatever. But I'm, like, totally, like, hacking my own email productivity approach, and it has been incredible. And like, I just want to like tell, I've been tweeting about it nonstop for weeks, and I think everybody should do it.
Wow.
I think email is like a fundamentally bad and problematic product, and I think it was built for a different internet and has not evolved with the current internet. And I think that we're all suffering because of that. Nobody likes email. Everyone,
no.
Study after study after, I'm writing a story about this, but every study you look at talks about like the cognitive decline that email brings and the lack of productivity that email causes and how nobody likes it. Nobody can keep up with it. Everyone hates it, and there has to be a better solution. But this is one of the ways I'm trying to build a solution for myself to get around my own issues with email. It's been amazing. It's the one thing this month I'm like so, so excited about.
Do you know this concept of the wounded healer? Have you heard of this?
Wounded healer.
Okay.
No.
This is amazing. So it's the same woman, Yael, that I just told you about.
Yeah. Mohammed.
She told me, we had this long conversation about FOMO, FOBO, and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I'm picking her brain. And she told me that Carl Jung came up with this concept of the wounded healer, which
mm-hmm.
is the best person to help somebody is the person who is just one step ahead in their own healing.
Oh, yeah.
So, like,
yeah,
you're
yeah,
the
totally.
Wounded healing for email.
Right.
And it's funny because Adam Grant, I've not met Adam Grant, but
yeah.
when my first book came out, it was an entrepreneurship book, and a mm-hmm. student of his put me in touch with him. And he was so, he was like, listen, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
But he did it in such a direct and nice way
right,
that I was like,
right.
You know what, man?
Yes.
You do you.
100%.
I respect that. Like,
100%.
I get you.
Yes.
Like, and it
yeah.
was just vis-a-vis the people, and I could name names that I'm not going to, but
yeah.
I people that like are, you know, when I was, you know, promoting my book and somebody would be like, come on my podcast. And then they would like ghost you and you're like, wait, you invited me on your show. And now you're ghosting me. And it's like, and you feel I'm so busy. Nobody's that busy.
Totally, totally. Honestly, it's like changed my life, changed my approach to work. I mean, Anna Grant is just such a genius, but it's incredible. It's incredible.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yes. So we can move on.
Now that we got the email from Hack, I imagine people send you cool gadgets all the time to try and test. Am I right or am I wrong?
So we aren't allowed to accept things like that. But they do send them to Wirecutter, which is a New York Times company, and they actually work directly with Smarter Living. That's our product review and recommendation site. Yes. It's amazing, wirecutter.com. Check it out. But so they handle all of the like gadget reviews and product recommendations. It's an amazing crew. Like, I don't know if you read Wirecutter, but it launched in 2011, and I've been reading it since then, but their whole thing is like they just dive super deep into like one category, one product, and look at everything on the market, and then come up with one single.
I need that.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Where has this been? Oh my goodness.
It's incredible. Like, I don't buy anything without checking Wirecutter. Like, even way before I worked with them, like, it's just like an incredible site with incredible people. I think it's the greatest, like, review website, like, that was ever conceived. It's amazing.
Wow.
But it's funny, they are in the process of moving to a warehouse in Long Island City. And it's this huge office space because they need so much space to test all the gadgets and test everything. And so a couple of weeks ago, they invited a couple of folks on Smarter Living to come out to check out the space. But that day, they happened to be reviewing mattresses. So in the warehouse, they just had this like field of mattresses, like 20 or 30 mattresses just set up, and people are just like filtering in all day, just like laying down, taking a little siesta, just like hanging out. It was incredible. I'm like, that's the process. They just bring in a ton of people, look at everything. It's incredible. Yeah. But like, how many companies are like reviewing 20 mattresses?
No, that,
just opening it up to the company.
That is a great, okay. See, the recommendations are flowing now.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me a gadget that everybody should have that maybe we don't even know we need.
I'll give you two.
Okay.
One is a very expensive one. One is a very cheap one. The very expensive one is, I think wireless earbuds are an absolute game changer. And if you're like a commuter, I think like they're the biggest thing you can do for your general morning happiness. Like you're not fumbling with cables. You're not like accidentally getting unplugged when they catch your cable on your jacket. I bought mine like over the summer and like it's been an absolute game changer. Even just like the little Apple ones or like upgrade, get like nice ones or whatever. But I think they're amazing and I've recommended them so many times to so many people, recommended them in Smarter Living. I think they're incredible and totally change the way you navigate the world.
Totally.
So it's the expensive one. And then the cheap one, well, cheap-ish, is this is another thing that I've recommended like six times in Smarter Living is Tweezerman Slant Tips Tweezers. And they're just a pair of tweezers, but they cost $17 to $20.
Okay.
Which, yes, is expensive for a dumb little pair of tweezers, but they're incredible. And it's one of those things that you didn't realize you needed and how bad you have it right now until you experience it. It's like watching a movie in 4K when you've only, you know, seen like low HD or something. Like
okay.
Total like different experience. But so these little tweezers, $17, you know, buy-ins or whatever. But it's just something you never knew you needed. And then once you have it, once you cross that bridge, you're like, I don't know how I lived before.
You're like, oh my
incredible.
God, how did I prune my bonsai? Like what?
It's amazing, yeah. But I like set it up for like Christmas gifts. Like I have like three pairs in my house. It's amazing. And it seems like such a dumb little thing, but it's like one of those tiny little things that can have such huge impact because it's something you use regularly. So having a really, really nice thing, it's amazing. But the Tweezerman slant tip tweezers.
And pro tip on the wireless earphone. So I have AirPods.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, I was on a flight. I fell asleep on a flight from Amman, Jordan to Cairo.
Uh-huh.
Fell out of my ear. I woke up. I was very out of it.
Yeah.
Went to through customs, realized that I had lost one of them.
Oh no.
Now I found out, going forward, you can actually use Find My iPhone to find your lost.
What?
I know. Now it was too late
crazy.
For me. This was like not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I went to the Apple store. They give you another one for, mm-hmm. I guess, $75.
Yeah,
which is,
yeah.
You know, it's not the worst thing in the world, but
know
going forward that if you lose it, you can actually use Find My iPhone.
I had no idea. That is an amazing tip.
Yeah. It's like,
that's Smarter Living next week.
Isn't
that's
that crazy? Yeah. Put it in there. As long as but I do want attribution.
That's exactly.
Important. You know, it's,
that's amazing. I love that.
Fear of losing my AirPod. Falma. All right. So Tim, this is the show about finding the power to choose what you actually want in business and life and finding the courage to miss out on the rest.
Mm-hmm.
As a man who spends his life liberating us from our day-to-day difficulties.
That's my job description.
How,
that's correct.
What's the key to being decisive?
So, kind of to get back to what we were saying earlier about, being able to free yourself of FOMO by knowing who you are and what's important to you. Getting back to that book, Essentialism by Greg McKeown, and this is just top of mind because I was just talking with him last week, but two things that he advocates and that he kind of reiterated when we were talking are two things that I've found really, really useful in my life and something that I've written a lot about and try to tell people when I can. So one is trying to project a conversation with yourself in the future around a given topic or a given idea or a given state of life, like where you want to be. And so for me, like what that means is trying to let's say like we're looking like 5 years advanced, like what are the things you want to accomplish in 5 years? And like that's like, one of those like 5-year plan, like general things that we all kind of like know in the abstract. But there was a handful of studies that I wrote about earlier this year that looked at the impact it can have on your decision making now when you actually put in genuine cognitive effort to imagine what your life will be like in X years or at X place. And so rather than like writing down like, oh, in 5 years I want to like have written a book and like have a new job and get a raise, like rather than do that, like think about the lifestyle and the life that you want in 5 years rather than specific goals, but what are your life, what's the life status that you want, and kind of work backward. And one of the most recent time I wrote about this was as it relates to financial decisions, because there's a lot of studies that say people are better at saving long-term when they imagine what life they want to have rather than a specific dollar amount or a specific, 401k amount or whatever. And they found that when people imagine what kind of life they want to have rather than the amount of money they want to have, they're much, much better at saving for the long-term. And so I think really, like, it's kind of a silly exercise, but, like, actually, like, trying to have a conversation with yourself 5 years in the future and really putting your place, or, trying to step into those shoes can really have, like, a very profound impact. And it's something that I've really had a lot of success with, and I do that a lot. And the other thing is 2 or 3 weeks ago, I wrote about why we kind of start things that we never finish. We pick up projects and, leave them halfway done or kind of lose interest. And, one of the kind of primary reasons we do that is because we severely underestimate the time and energy commitment that things are going to take. And so this is another thing that I spoke with Greg about. His kind of rule of thumb is that anytime he's evaluating a new project or idea and deciding whether he wants to take it on, he'll lay out whatever he thinks is the most accurate time investment that'll take, and then he multiplies it by 3. And then he bases a decision on the product of that. And again, it's one of those things that like sounds dumb, like that sounds like overkill. And he said when he first learned about it, he thought the same thing, that like, oh, sure, like maybe like a 50% increase, like that's reasonable. But multiplying it by 3, and he said once he started doing that, it proved 100% correct, and it actually like changed the way that he evaluates options and decisions. And, wow. I think that just, getting back to being realistic with what our expectations are and what the things we want to invest our time in, that's one thing. But then really being honest about the actual time it's going to take rather than the time that we think it's going to take. And I struggle with that all the time. Like, I'm a very bad procrastinator. I'm always running late, all that stuff. But, I think being more realistic about the time investment that things will take rather than the kind of emotional investment, what we kind of want to feel, what we want to get out of it, can actually lead to a lot more practical and realistic decision.
That's super interesting. It's funny because I've always, whenever I do to-do lists, I always include time as one of the, on the right column.
Yeah.
So that I can add up how much time it's going to take.
Right,
so
right.
I don't triple it, but I've always been like, I think that's a really good way to think about prioritization as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So lots of good stuff here. I could keep you all day, but obviously
great, yeah.
I want to have you to have your JOMO from from my interview.
I have to go see my cats after this,
there's some tweezing that needs to happen.
Exactly. My night tonight, that's right.
So tell everybody who wants to follow you and continue learning where they should go to find out more about you and to follow you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm twitter.com/TimHerrera, H-E-R-R-E-R-A. I'm on Instagram. Handle is Tim_Herrera. You can find me at The Times. Just Google New York Times, Tim Herrera. All my stuff is there. Shoot me an email, tim@nytimes.com. You'll get my auto reply, but I'll read your email. Shoot me a note. I love interacting with readers, love talking to people, love hearing new ideas and how people are implementing things. Please, just totally reach out. Love to meet new people.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
FOMO.
And now it's time for the FOMO moment of the show. This is the time where I talk about FOMO and its role in pop culture, or tell you about something that's giving me FOMO. But because this week's show was all about FOBO, I am rebranding this portion to the FOBO moment of the show. And I found some interesting stats, actually. LinkedIn found that FOBO is a huge problem in the workforce. In fact, 68% of workers have FOBO when they think about what might be out there for them outside of their current job. And they actually use the word FOBO in the press release. So thanks, LinkedIn. I appreciate it. So if you have these feelings, and it sounds like most people do, don't be afraid to look outside, find what else is out there, and stop worrying about the FOBO and actually get into action.
FOMO.
If you have an idea for the FOMO moment of the week, or if you have a question, reach out to me at letsconnect@patrickmcginnis.com or send me a tweet at pjmcginnis. You can also take the official FOMO Sapiens diagnostic at patrickmcginnis.com/FOMO-quiz and find out if you're a FOMO Sapiens or a FOBO Sapiens. FOMO Sapiens is part of the HBR Presents Network. The show is produced by AW360 and recorded in New York City. Theme music is by Mike McGinnis. If you like today's show, please be sure to subscribe, rate it, and recommend it to your friends. And as always, you can find me at patrickmcginnis.com. You can also take the official FOMO diagnostic at patrickmcginnis.com/FOMO-quiz to find out if you're a FOMO Sapiens.